And welcome to Kayak Fishing Radio, Mid-Atlantic. This is Greg Hammerhead Crisp standing in for Mark, the landing crew Wheeler, tonight. Mark had a death in the family, and we wish him the best, and look forward to hearing him again next week. I would like to welcome a couple of our guests right now. On the air, we have Chip Treehugger Gibson, the founder of Kayak Fishing Radio, calling in from down in Georgia. How you doing, Chip? Oops, we must have lost Chip there. We also hopefully still have Eric Slappy Harrison calling in from Boston. Are you there, Eric?
I'm still here.
Okay. Welcome to the show. Eric is a pro staff over at Cocotat and also Hoagie Soft Plastics. He is also a regular contributor to On the Water magazine, and is also currently the top point earner on Kayak Wars, fishing for the Hook One team. So, did we get you back?
I'm here, man. I had the mute button on.
Okay.
So, I said, thanks for taking the show tonight. We appreciate it and hope you have fun with it, man.
I hope I have fun with it, too. So, you know, please bear with me all out there. It's my first stab at this. We also have Rob, a bad bat cast. Looks like he just joined us. How you doing, Rob?
Good, Greg. How are you, man?
Very good.
Awesome.
Hanging in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you'll have fun with it. You're doing good. we'll see how you know. When you listen back to it, though, the next day you're just going to be like, oh. You know, and you want to, like, erase it from the annals together. I can't get Chip to erase my first show. I did my first show, and it was like a half-hour version. It was absolutely the most horrible thing ever. So, that's cool, man. You'll have fun with it. But, yeah, I'm glad that you're on, and I'm glad that you're filling in, and it's awesome.
Yep, it's going to be fun. I've decided that, so now it has to be. So, positive thinking there.
Hey, I would have jumped in and filled the slot, but, man, people can only handle, you know, it's bad enough that I'm on one night a week, you know.
Well, that,
two
that
nights and everybody would jump
decision
shit.
There. So, anyway, let's bring Eric up, and got a couple questions. He just had a new signature jig named after him in the Hoagie line, and was wondering, Eric, did you approach them about that, or did they approach you?
Actually, I got hooked up with Hoagie through Roland St. Dennis. He's the founder of the Yak Dogs website in Connecticut. And he happened to know Mike Hogan, and he also knew what a plastics fanatic I am. I mean, I'm one of these guys who I've been fishing plastics for, like, the last 35 years. And I've probably only been fanatical about plastics for about the last 25 years. So I just, you know, I spend most of my fishing time tossing plastic. So, Mike had heard of me, and Roland gave us an introduction, and Mike's an idea guy. He's always looking for new products, new ideas, talking to people about how they fish the lures. And so I just, you know, I got a chance to talk to him and tell him kind of what I was looking for. I've been doing, in the last 10 to 15 years, I've been doing, you know, primarily striper fishing. And a lot of inshore stuff. You know, before I started kayaking about 8 or 9 years ago, I was fishing really shallow shorelines, and it's tough to find a jig to present along there. So I started talking to Mike about, you know, these fishing problems that I was solving, you know, the finding jig heads that I could use to fish up in shallow from both shore and kayak, and he liked the idea. So, you know, it was just a great way to get introduced to him and be able to talk to someone who's willing to listen. It took us a while to get it done, but I think it's a product that, at least for me, it's going to be what I use about 75-80% of the time I fish for stripers.
Very cool. I've moved northeast myself and just starting to get into stripers, but in the freshwater, I've primarily been plastics for a while. Really like them, especially how far they've come in the last 10 or so years. Come a really long way since the old rubber worms that didn't have much action behind them at all.
I was lucky enough to grow up in California, where the whole plastics revolution there started like in the 1980s, and people were doing a lot of hand pours, and that's where a lot of these companies like Double A's and Fish Trap came in, and they started really innovating stuff and coming out with some really nice looking baits, and these guys were fishing both for largemouths and for calico bass, sand bass, that kind of stuff. And I really got into it out there, and one day I was looking through Bass Pro and saw Sluggos in there, and I was like, wow, that is the lure that I want. That's an anchovy. And I think there's a big difference between the way that you fish plastics in saltwater and the way that you fish them in freshwater, because, you know, freshwater structure you approach very differently than saltwater structure, and saltwater fish tend to be, you know, in general, they're larger, they're more aggressive, they're a bit faster, and they're not in as dense cover. So it's a lot more chase it down, a lot more speed on the saltwater plastics. I think a lot of people are always surprised at how fast I fish plastics.
They have teeth, too.
They have teeth, too. Although, you know, being up here in Boston, we're mostly on stripers and not so many bluefish. But, you know, you get a big enough striper, you get striper hand, not striper thumb.
Yep. How about you down there in Florida, Rob?
What's that?
How about you down in Florida? What do you use for plastics down there?
Oh, God, what don't I use?
well, we know you're not a BOA pro staff.
No. but that is probably one of my favorites. My go-to favorites is DOA shrimp quarter ounce measles color, which is like a clear with red flake. Let's see what else. I love the DOA Cal Chads and the DOA flukes. If you never tried a fluke, those are really good for when you got to work stuff slow.
Flukes are really a universal bait, I think. We use them a lot up here for everything.
Yeah, I like to get the smaller ones though, like the 2.5. They do make. I don't know if it's. I think it's Bass Assassin that makes the 2.5 inch ones that are. You know, sometimes you got to scale it down here. And I'll use those. I've even used crappie jigs. You know, like little teeny plastic curly tail crappie jigs. You know, to. When you got to downsize them, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But let's see what else. Storm, I love Storm. The wild-eyed minnows are fantastic. God, even the weighted like wild-eyed, swimming mullets and stuff. Those are pretty decent. And soft plastics make up probably 3/4 of my arsenal of baits that I throw. I don't know, man.
Yeah, Rob, do you fish for tarpon with plastics there?
Usually if I go after tarpon, I will go after. I do. But I'll use either a Miradine XL or Fly. I go after them on Fly.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was talking with Mike Hogan about, was that the his two big markets are striped bass in Massachusetts and then the tarpon in Florida, and a number of the fly guides have switched over to fishing the big hoagies because they're so effective on the tarpon.
Yeah, I've thought about that. I've seen those things and. I'm thinking, wow, you know, wonder how, what size they would like, you know. I don't know if they would like a huge one or if they would, you know, prefer something smaller. I guess I'd have to try them. They do, those things, man, they're so strange because you can never really, you know, get dialed in on exactly what they're going to eat, you know. I've seen them eating glass minnows, you know, like by gulping down mouthfuls of glass minnows, and so it's like, it's hard to figure out what exactly they're going to eat from day to day, man. But yeah.
So mostly it depends what bait they're on.
Now, do you know if you would fish one of those with a jig head, or would it be unweighted?
That's mostly what I do for stripers, but
really?
for the tarpon, I guess they do a mix depending on what the situations are. I've never been down there. I've never fished tarpon, but I know that they do a mix of jig heads and rigging them weightless.
Yeah.
You know, they come in heavy enough sizes so that they're really easy to cast long distances.
I mean, the water down here is really shallow, a lot of the water that I fish. And
yeah.
Oftentimes, you know, I'll fish unweighted plastics, you know, because there's something about the fall, you know, like when you use the jig head, you know, it'll dive right into the water, you know, into the bottom or into the grass, and a lot of times I don't want to do that. So it's almost like the old bass fishing mentality where you want to, you know, I like to keep it above the, you know, in the strike zone, you know, and you figure if the bottom, let's say it's 3 feet and the grass is going to be, you know, 8 inches off the bottom, I like to keep it in that just above the grass zone, you know.
Yeah.
And a good way to do that is to fish. You know, I like to fish them weightless.
I got to tell you that my inspiration for the jig heads that I've been fishing over the last 10 years has mostly been kind of the stuff that I see from that Florida guys are fishing with on flats, because I'm kind of a lot of the places that I fish are. You know, under 7 feet deep, and I'm throwing a 10-inch plastic usually, and
wow.
A lot of the times the bass just, they don't want to come up. They don't want to come up to the very surface. You get that lure down a foot, or even better yet, you keep it within 2 feet of the bottom, that's when you're going to get bit. And so I used to buy a lot of the stand-up style jig heads that they sell, and, you know, usually in just a half ounce. And with a half ounce and a 10-inch or a 13-inch plastic on there, you could just, you know, they swim really nice. It gives you just a little bit more weight for casting and keeps you up out of the rocks. You know, that's one of the great things about stand-up jig heads. You know, they're designed not to snag on the bottom, and that's the big challenge you guys have. And that's one of our challenges, too, because, you know, you're fishing in 7 feet of water, but then there's boulders that are sticking out of the water. So you got to skim it across the weeds and stuff and work it around the boulders. So the working single hook stuff is really important up in the shallows here, because there's so many you know, places where you just have this big chunky seaweed too that it's easy to swim over, but if you got a treble hook on there, you're just stuck in it.
I've always wanted to go up in that region and fish, like, you know, maybe, well, I know, Montauk or something like that in the fall, you know, like during the big bait run when you got, like, big striper blitzes and bluefish blitzes going on up there. I've heard like, legendary stuff about that time of year up there. And I'm, like, hooked on bluefish now ever since I caught, like, a 15-inch one there at Mosquito Lagoon not too long ago. And now it's, like, I got to figure out a way to get on some of those, you know, some big ones, because... That was that was quite a fish, even though it was only 15 inches, you know.
You got to come up to the Jamaica Bay tourney next year.
Yeah, I know. Greg was telling me about, I saw some of his pictures where, you know, his buddy had a 30-incher and stuff, so it's pretty awesome. But, yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, the soft plastics and baits in general, you know, in the mid-90s, people were after the California bass, you know, largemouth bass and such. And so they started making, like, these 10 and 14-inch rainbow trout lures, okay, for, like, California bass fishing.
Yeah.
And I remember when Sluggos first came out, that was, like, I was really into bass fishing back then. And that was like the thing to use back then was like Sluggos, and you could like skip them under his ox and everything. It was great, but I definitely remember. And the Hoagies kind of remind me of that era where they had the, you know, like 14 inch, you know, rainbow trout lures for bass. You know, and you're thinking, man, 14-inch rainbow trout. I'll catch that any day, but. That's basically what the big bass out in California were feeding on. That's why they were getting so big.
Yeah, if you look on the Hoagie Facebook page right now, I posted a picture of about a 22-pound bass I caught the other night, and it's got a 13-inch Hoagie in its mouth, and you know it looks like a 20-inch fish with a 6-inch lure in its mouth. You know, those big lures are just nothing for the larger fish. And last year I really focused in on the 13-inch jig and hoagie, just because it's got a really big and meaty presentation, and that's the one that you use when there's a mix of big and small fish, and it's a good way to call out the bigger fish from the school. The small fish still eat it, and you still catch some, but most of the times you'll get one or two hits from a small one, and then all of a sudden it just stops. That freight train of the big fish going in there, seeing this bait getting away from the small fish, and then the big fish just goes in there and finishes it off.
They get jacked up when they see all that. That's awesome. What
color?
The
competition factor.
What
I fish mostly at night. I'm not a big color guy, but I fish mostly at night, and I usually use either straight black, or they have a color called blamber, which is black on the back and an amber belly, and you know it looks like a reasonable eel imitation. So you know I always say I fish any color as long as it's black, but I think that red looks like black at night, and I also use black and white, and then every once in a while I'll use white ones. So and I've had times when I just randomly pick out colors just to see if there's any impact on the bite. And I've never really found that when they're biting, it doesn't seem to matter, and when they're not, it doesn't seem to matter either. So.
Well, that's Greg. You're into the Hoagies, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I've been listening to Eric talk about them for a couple of years now, and being that coming from freshwater, I always liked fishing plastics, and especially the last 10 years or so, wanted to pick that up when I was moving back to stripers, which I really haven't fished since I was a kid, growing up on the Jersey Shore with my grandfather. So getting back into that, and figured that was a good way to get back into it. We also have another guest that joined us. Are you there, Stan?
Yes.
Hey, there you are.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
All right.
So, do you have anything to add to this discussion on plastics?
I was listening to plastics for the last few minutes, and I know around my area the Z-Man plastics are hugely popular. They're extremely difficult to get on a hook. Because of just the makeup of the plastic, but they do last a long time, and I think they look nice in the water. It's fishing to dig them.
Very good. Cool. So, we were talking talking about those plastics and how to fish them. And just another question I have for you, Eric, is, you know, what's the difference in this new jig head that Hoagie's brought out for you versus, you know, what you were able to get before? You know, what's the pluses to this new jig?
Well, the basic idea is this, is that you're fishing in shallow, and you want a jig head that's going to swim. The standard jig head has a 90-degree bend to it. The hook eye is set back a little ways, which tends to make the jig dive down into the weeds, and that's exactly what you don't want. So we used a 60-degree bend and put the hook eye in the front of the lure so that when you cast it out, you know, you're drifting along in the kayak. Typically, you're drifting in a little bit deeper water, casting up into shallow. So you don't want a sink on there. You want it, it hits the water, you start swimming it back to you, and you let it slide down, and it doesn't bury itself in the weeds. The other problem that I've had is the collars on a lot of the jigs just haven't been enough to glue onto. So you end up just, you catch one or two bass, and you tear off a $1.50 or $2 plastic after just a couple of fish. And with a longer collar on there, you've got more area to glue to, and the jig stays on much better. The shape of the head, too, is shaped more like a swimming jig. You know, the stand-up style jig heads, if you just cast out a stand-up style jig head, you notice how it swims in the water. So we kind of gave it that kind of upswept style head so that the pressure of the water will push the jig head a little up in the water column, and that helps it bounce over rocks. And the other big problem that I've had with stripers is, for some reason, stripers bend out hooks a lot. My theory on it is that they just have some hard spots in their mouth where the only penetration you get is the very tip of the hook. And with a 90-degree bend on your jig head, on your jig hook, you're pulling that line against just the tip of the hook. And I can't tell you how many times I've bent out hooks on really nice fish. It happened about 6 or 7 times last year, where I just completely bent out jigs on, you know, you're not bending out a jig head on a 15-pound fish. You're bending them out on 25-plus-pound fish. And that's just a really frustrating experience. So, you know, we got a much better hook, and you tend not to bend out the 60-degree jigs. Doesn't mean you're not going to pull hooks when you hook them in that spot, but I think it just gives you a better chance of landing the fish. It's been a frustration the last few years as the striper population has aged and we're getting into a little bit bigger fish. You know, 10 years ago, catching a 30-pounder was a really big deal. Last year, catching a 30-pounder was in the best part of the season. It was an every other trip kind of thing. So this will put a few more big fish in my kayak.
That's pretty cool. And those of us that have seen some of your pictures and stuff know that you're pretty good at putting those big fish in your kayak.
Well, last year was an unusual year too. I mean, we got really lucky in Boston in that in the late season, the stripers tend to move off the bank, sell wagon. They're out about 20 to 30 miles feeding on sand eels on the bank. And once the water really warms up and all the tuna move in, those big bass will move in shore to feed. And we had a huge body of fish around Boston Harbor last fall, and the fishing was the best I've ever seen for stripers. There were no small fish around. The small fish vacated. I had one night where I had a 24-inch fish and had it on the surface next to my boat and watched two very large stripers just whack it. Both of them took a bite at it, and I put the reel in free spool, thinking that maybe one of them would gargle the 24-inch bass, but neither one of them did.
Oh. That's pretty amazing. let's move in and think the next topic I'd like to sort of bring up is the growth of kayak fishing over the last couple of years. And, you know, we saw over at the Jamaica Bay weekend and the Jacksonville tournament weekend that there were over, you know, in two tournaments on a single day on the East Coast, that there were over 700 yak anglers out there fishing. And, you know, I think that's a pretty impressive number. And wanted to throw it out there to see, you know, what the rest of you guys thought about it.
Well, to me, it's been gigantic, the amount of people that have, the sport has just exploded pretty much since about 2008, I could say. I don't know, man. I mean, all you got to do is go look at, go out the Dunedin Causeway on a Saturday morning, and that'll tell you everything you need to know about the growth of kayak fishing. I think technology has also taken it a little bit further. You know, there's advances in kayaks, you know, within the last 10 years where, you know, a couple of years ago it was just, you know, if you had a piece of plastic that floated, you know, you were good to go. it's a little bit different now. But that's my take on it, man.
Chip?
Yeah, you know, when you talk about technology, you know, I think one of the other things is that all the different types of kayaks really has brought more and more people into the sport, because every region has different stuff. Like around Boston, we have strong currents. So, you know, you spend a lot of time fishing rips, and if you're in a paddle kayak, you know, you're spending as much time paddling as you are fishing. But if you're in a Hobie, you're out there and you're in the rips, and it's no big deal. We don't have to traverse through a lot of really shallow water, so we don't have to worry about jamming the pedals on stuff. But, you know, I look at all those boats that you guys have for Florida that are good stand-up boats and great in shallow water. You know, basically every type of fishing now has a type of kayak that's going to fit it. You know, when you look what Ocean Kayak has done out west with all the guys who have to do surf launches, you know, they've really put a lot of thought into tackle storage and getting people safely through the surf with their gear. So I think that's part of it, too. I mean, I've been out recently around the spots I fish in the harbor, and this year I'm seeing way more people already than I have in years past. It used to be that on a Saturday morning I'd come in and I would only see one other kayaker. I was out the other day with about a dozen kayakers that were all drifting for flounder in the harbor.
Yeah, it's definitely grown, man.
Yep. Chip, do you have something you'd like to add on that, or any thoughts? Must have his phone on mute again. How about,
you know, I think...
any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I knew Stan does. Being new to kayak fishing, I think it's an amazing sport because you're able to scratch so many itches in this in kayak fishing. I mean, you feel the need to fish. I feel the need to, like, customize and you know, and rig up things. And I can, you know, I've had more fun, like, rigging up my milk crate as I do fishing on my bay boat. It's inexpensive. It's easy to do. I can do it on the fly. I mean, it doesn't take but a couple of minutes to throw my kayak in the back of my truck. There's just the camaraderie that I really like, that there's just something about the sport draws people with this passion, and they want to share their experiences, and everybody seems cool, and it's a camaraderie thing that I I miss a lot. Just out of the military, and I think that's part of it. It's very adaptable, and everybody can find their niche.
Cool.
Yeah, I think your point about the just the gear factor of it, I think, is a big attraction for a lot of people. I think a lot of people are gearheads, and kayaking fits right in there. Gives you a chance to do a lot of customizing, and it's just fun to, you know, I make my own rods. I rig all my baits. I do as much of stuff as I can. I rig my boat. You know, we're all kind of into the gear aspect of it and setting up the perfect fishing situation for us.
There's plenty of different things you can do with it, man. You know, it's very versatile, you know, and like Eric said, you know, you can it's for all sorts of fishing, man. You know, and I think that's probably what really attracts people to it, you know, in my opinion anyway, is that, you know, it's versatile. You can do, you know, you can basically get a basic kayak and rig it any way you want, man.
Yeah, and you can't forget about the economy, too. You know, it's been a little rough the last few years, so a lot of people are scrapping boats and realizing that the kayaking's a good substitute for a boat. You know, around here, with in shallows, the kayak gives you an advantage over boat because you can go places they can't.
Oh, yeah, that's the case around here, definitely, all the time. And even Dee says that a lot, too, you know, on the East Coast of Florida there, you know, you can get in places where you can't, where boats can't get to.
Yep, some big advantages there. And, you know, my biggest problem now is now I need to scrap the big truck that I had to tow a boat and buy a smaller car so I can afford to drive more often to salt water.
Yeah, man, you can, you know, it wouldn't take much for you to rig out a Hyundai Accent, you know, with a kayak rack and, you know, with your kayak rack that you have there that you made, Greg, you could probably fix it so you could fit more kayaks on there.
Yeah, carry more kayaks than the car holds people.
Yeah, there you go.
So I think Chip made it back in. Are you there, Chip?
Yeah, I'm here. Do you got me?
Yep, we got you.
All right, cool. Let's see. I was just watching the chat room there. We got Brett Allen. He's from Georgia Kayak Fishing. He was the other guy who made it down to Cedar Key with me and Bill and the family this week, this past weekend. We've also got Coastal Fishing in that just popped in there, and it says it's his first kayak fishing radio session. Welcome aboard. Scuba Stan's in there, Slappy, and Isaac the Nothing Miller is hanging in on the west coast there, raining and 60 degrees out there. So, but I like the gear aspect. I like the camaraderie. We were talking about that this weekend. We, Bill and I, as we were working on getting a picture of that big black drum that he caught, you know, an airplane flew over the top of us. It was a Piper Cub or something, and he asked me if I missed, you know, the flying part of the Marine Corps, and, you know, he was in the Air Force, and he turned wrenches on airplanes, and neither one of us missed that part of it, but we did miss the part about, just like Stan said earlier, about, you know, the camaraderie and the guys that are all, the guy and the gals that are out there kayak fishing. I mean, as we went through Florida this weekend, you know, I saw everybody with kayaks. I was handing out kayak fishing radio stickers to everybody, and, you know, everybody's cool about it. I mean, it's a lot of fun. You're up close and personal with the fish, and like I say, I don't have to spend, it only costs me a couple of power bars and a couple of bottles of Gatorade, and I can run my kayak all day long on it, so.
Very good. Well, talking about Cedar Key there, Chip, The next topic I wanted to sort of bring up was introducing kids to fishing and then kayak fishing. And I know you had your clone out there. How did you first introduce him to the kayak? How did you go about that, and how old was he?
It was, let's see, I think Brad was about, I think he was 9 when we got his first kayak. And he's always been into the boats and going and doing things on the water. I mean, he was one of those little water baby. He learned how to swim classes when he was a little guy, and I had him on the boat. He would sleep down in the cuddy cabin, and as we would fish, he'd come up and then rag me about not being able to catch fish. So, but it was just a natural thing of taking him into the kayak, and he needed his own. And it was like when he got bored because the fishing slowed down, he could just paddle around and do his own thing, and it wouldn't bother me while I was trying to fish. So most of the time it's just put him out there on the plastic, give him one rod. The first time I took him out, I gave him 2, and that turned out to be a big mess. So, but the one rod for a kid, and very little gear, and just let him go to town. Pinch the barbs down on their hook so that if they catch a fish, they can take it out themselves. If it gets lost, they'll go back after another one. Just put them on a piece of plastic, make sure they've got a good PFD and they know how to get in and out of the boat. He played in the pool with his kayak for about a week before we took it out onto some open water. But
very
got a new
cool
collar.
Yep. Uh-oh. Who do we have there?
I don't recognize it.
Oops, did you lose? Looks. Who do we have on the line right now?
Eric, what's the area code?
Dialed in again.
Oh, we lost Eric and he came back up.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, because I have a second phone.
I think we're losing you now. Can you guys hear him?
No, he was losing. He was fading out.
Okay.
He's 804, right?
No,
804,
he's 70.
Me, man. Yeah. 804, it's me, Rob Choi, man.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Rob Choi.
I didn't see you come in there. How you doing, Rob?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Been up to fishing lately?
Some more ledge rum.
Very good.
Yeah,
very good. Well, we were just talking about kids and getting kids fishing and stuff, and I know you got a couple little ones at home.
Yeah.
Have you introduced them yet?
Yeah, I took Natalie. She's 2 years old now. She last year around this time here, I got one of those itty bitty PFDs, and I just kind of took her out in the kayak so she can. Oh, just something to do, you know. And this past, I think it was like last week or so, I think it was last week, I took her to the pond for the first time. I bought her a little princess rod during Christmas, and she's been kind of just messing with it in the house. So I finally took her out and got a little bobber and some night crawlers and got her some sunfish, and she had a good time. She was pretty excited. She actually didn't get the concept of kind of raising the rod fit, so she's just kind of tried to back the fish out of the water. But it was good times.
Very good. Very good. Well, I took my whole family out in our maiden family voyage this past weekend, and got my 7-year-old and his first kayak fish. Got him some sunfish, and that was good, and he was happy and celebrated his 7th birthday this weekend. So he's enjoying that, you know, still working on learning how to paddle and practicing. But that's it's a good thing. And, you know, he's able to paddled around pretty good, and we spent about 3 hours out on the water. So that was a good time, and I've had my now 10-year-old out on the water. He fished with me last year from his own kayak, and first put him in a kayak when he was 7, although wasn't quite into fishing from it yet. So, you know, it's good to get those kids out in the water and fishing. Do we have you back, Eric?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Just barely.
Okay. Let me do one more thing and switch phones.
Okay. So, Stan, do you have any kids that you take fishing regularly?
I've got a 7-month-old little boy and a 2.5-year-old little girl, and I've got a little princess rod, which she's destroyed, and I've got to get a new one. And we practice catching it in the yard. I've taken her kayak with me back in like November. She was a little under 2 years old, and had her in her little life jacket, and it was pretty awesome. So I'm definitely looking forward to getting her into fishing. And we live on a little tiny pond, so we're about to break out the night crawlers too and see if we can put her on a little bullhead catfish or something.
That's cool, man. You and I, we got the same age kids, man. So it'll be cool to see how it goes, man.
Yeah, and my little boy has no choice. He's going to be a fisherman. His name is Tide, like the ebb and flow.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it was, you know, I love taking my boys fishing, you know, and started them fishing, you know, obviously from docks and the shore, you know, when they were young. And, you know, remember the first time my oldest son, who at the time was about 4, caught about an 18-inch bass, just sitting there with his little Snoopy rod. With a little curly-tailed grub right off the dock, dropped it in the water, and a big old bass came and chomped down on it. So, let's see. I think we have Eric back. Are you there?
I'm going to mute out for a minute.
Yeah, I'm back in. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
All right. This is better than a Sprint commercial.
So I know you have some children that you like to take fishing, Eric.
Yeah, I have 3, and I really have not done much in the kayak with them yet, other than, you know, taking them out and around on sitting on the kayak with me. My older son's just turned 9, so I think he's probably up to the point where he could handle a small kayak by himself, and I've been considering the options. I was wondering if anybody else has been fishing a tandem with their kids. That seems like one way to go. Another one might be to get a smaller kayak for him. I have 2 kayaks. I have a Hobie Revo, and I also have a Ocean Kayak Trident, which is the 15-footer. So that's a little big for a 9-year-old to be paddling. I can barely paddle it.
Yeah. You know, with my son, he was 9 last year when I first started him. He's you know, for the most part, a head taller than most of the kids in his class. And when I stepped up and got my Malibu, he got the hand-me-down of a Prowler 13 that I was fishing out of, which, you know, proved to be a pretty good kayak for him because it is such a narrow kayak. And he had a little problem initially with wind and the wind cocking because it was a little bit long for him, but you know, he's doing a lot better this year and a lot more comfortable.
That sounds good. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of shore fishing. I took the kids out this weekend, and we went and we caught a bunch of sunfish and got a couple for our aquarium at our house. And then we also had a little family kind of picnic hangout at the down by the river, and while we were hanging out, I threw out a couple lines for carp, and we got a few fish that were between probably about 8 and 12 pounds. And even the 4-year-old got into reeling in the carp. And, of course, as soon as we got the carp up into the shore, he handed me the rod and ran. But the carp are a little rough on the smaller kids because they need a little extra help holding onto the rod, but they can usually do the reeling in of the fish at that point. And
yeah.
It's fun to see for them to see a fish that's like a third of their size.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite personal childhood memories was we lived on a lake in New Jersey that had a bunch of, 15 to 20-pound carp regularly in it. And my grandfather, would go out there and bait them and catch them and let me reel them in. And, I'm pretty sure he tied a rope to my waist most of the time to keep them from pulling me in. But, that was a great memory growing up, catching those huge fish that were nearly as big as I was.
That's great.
Pretty good. So, some other things wanted to bring up, and I know Eric is also on the board of directors for the New England kayak fishing site, and talk a little bit about some tournaments coming up and the striper shootouts. I believe the third week of August, Eric?
Yes, it's the third weekend in August, and it's a three-day format. It starts Friday night at, I think it's 7, and runs through Saturday at about 10, I mean Sunday, till 10 in the morning. And it covers a large area up here, and it's at a time of year when the striper fishing can be really good. It can be somewhat inconsistent in August, but if you fish at night, you can always catch some fish. And last year we had some pretty good sized fish. In past tournaments, the biggest winner of the tournament was a 50 and a half inch fish a few years back. This past year, the biggest striper was 46 inches, and it was caught on a hoagie. So,
there you go.
Yeah. One of the things that I like about the Neckiff tourney is that we break it out into to bait and artificial divisions, so that with stripers, a lot of times if you go out bait fishing, your results are going to be different, and you're typically going to catch larger fish than you would with lures. But this last year, I just happened to find a pretty good spot, a big fish, and was able to pound them on the plastics. And actually, the plastics, the artificial division, we had the biggest fish in the tournament, and probably two of the four or five biggest fish in the tournament in the entries. And so, it's a great tournament. There's a lot of camaraderie. It's kind of like Jamaica Bay in that folks camp out in an area. It's different that people will spread out more, and there's an opportunity to try several different types of fishing. You can try like the Rocky Massachusetts shoreline, or you can go up and try Joppa Flats, which is like it's similar to lake fishing, except you have the shot at catching a 40-something inch striped bass.
Cool.
It's a fun tournament, yeah.
And last year, I think I read there were about 150 or so participants in it?
Yeah, we generally cap the tournament, try to cap it at 150 because of the site that we use for our Sunday kind of cookout celebration. It's going to be interesting as we get more and more demand for it, but our demand has pretty much met up with the space over the last few years. So we've been growing up to around 150 over the last 3 years.
Okay. So. And then the proceeds from that tournament, I know, get spread around to a couple different charities.
Yeah, we've been doing a few different charities. There's the Salem Boys and Girls Club, the Children's Floating Hospital, and boy, I'm blanking. It's the same one that we use for supported at Jamaica Bay.
Yeah, D down at Casting for Recovery.
Yeah, Casting for Recovery also participates.
Yep.
And there's a lot of raffles and other things that we do to raise extra money for the charities. So NEKF is a nonprofit. We set it up as a nonprofit organization, and we do get donations and stuff from, and we have a membership program to provide the funds to run the site. And then once we go beyond the hosting fees and software, we end up donating the rest of that to charity. So we raise money through both the tournament and just through the general website, and we just keep enough in the bank to pay the bills, and the rest of it goes out to the charity. So that's been a good thing, and some of the people on the board of directors have actively been involved with some of the charities that we support, which is great to see. So it's not just the money, but it's also folks putting in their time.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. And the NEKF site has really grown. I mean, we're over 3,000 members now. And it's grown along with the sport. You know, it started just 5 or 6 years ago just as a whim to make a more friendly place to meet up on in New England. And there, a lot of the big sites had kayak fishing forums, but the guys were looking for a dedicated kayak fishing forum, and I think that's kind of happened all up and down the coast, and I think that's one of the other things you were talking about, the spread of kayak fishing. I think the forums have also kind of welcomed new people into the sport. I think kayak fishing has been much more welcoming than shore fishing and other styles of fishing, because the camaraderie of being out in the water, the safety in numbers, that kind of thing.
Very good. And I also want to give a shout-out to a tournament that's happening this weekend out in Lake Cumberland out in Kentucky. I believe the tournament's actually on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. And that one's going to benefit Real Recovery. And if you'd like to get some information on that, I know there are links to it up on yakangler.com. You can check them out and follow the tournament to the second annual tournament out at Lake Cumberland as well. So, why don't we throw it at this point? We're nearing the end of our hour. We'll pass it around the table and ask everybody about their plans to get out on the water the rest of the week. You still in there, Rob?
Yeah, I'm here, buddy. I'm going Saturday night/Sunday morning. Me and my buddy are kind of planning to be on the water at 4 a.m., and we're going to probably fish dock lights partially, and then the rest grass flats, and see how we can tear up stuff there on that.
What are you guys going to target?
Probably redfish, trout, snook, whatever's available on the flats at that time. Probably lizard fish. I'm just kidding.
Very good. And I know you got to be heading out at some point over the next couple of days, Eric.
Yeah, I will probably get out tomorrow night, and also on like Sunday night, Saturday morning, and tomorrow night be one of those like couple hours after work, get out and fish the rips for stripers. And there's the bigger fish are just starting to show up now, and then Sunday morning I'll probably look to see what time the best tide is, probably get out there at like 1:30 in the morning and target stripers until it gets light, and then flip over to some flounder fishing. In Boston this time of year, we only have two fish that we can fish for, and that's stripers and flounder. And the the chances of catching anything else are pretty slim. I so far this year I caught one cod. That's my other non-striper flounder fish, and in about four more weeks the bluefish may or may not show up. I didn't catch any bluefish till the fall last year, so we've got a somewhat limited fishery around here, but it's fun with the striped bass, and that's what I'm going to be focused in on this week.
Very good. And Stan, you got any plans to get out on the water?
I'll be working all weekend, but kayak related, I'm outfitting my new truck. I'm having to get rid of my much beloved Toyota Tacoma for a larger vehicle with four doors. And so I just ordered the roof rack and the tonneau cover to, you know, to hide some of my gear and the mud mats for the inside of the truck. So I'll be outfitting that, but I'm making big plans. My wife's out of town the 22nd through the 27th, so I am doing recon for the Charleston Boondoggle, and every spare minute that I'm not working or when my boss ain't looking, I'm going to be kayak fishing.
That's good. And we also want to give make mention that I believe it's Columbus Day weekend. We are going to try to head down to Charleston and do a get-together that's, open to anybody that wants to show up. And if you want to check that out, there'll be some posts and some information going up on yakangler.com for that. And let's see, is Chip there? Do you got any plans for fishing this weekend?
Well, I wound up double booking myself. I had early on in the spring said that I would try to make it up to the Cumberland event, but Georgia Kayak Fishing has their Henry County Special Olympics event this weekend, and I had told them that I would try to do a podcast and capture some audio, you know, some historical audio for the event this weekend. So I'm going to be doing that. That's a great event. It's with Henry County Special Olympics. We're going to have the head director for the Special Olympics, Georgia, is going to be there with us. So we're looking for a big turnout, a couple hundred folks there. We've put together some donations and got a enclosed trailer with kayaks that we're donating to the Special Olympics group there. They're thinking about making kayaking an event for the Special Olympics, and so it's going to be a great turnout. We're going to have a lot of fun, and my apologies to the folks there in Cumberland. We'll try to make it next year, and the official term now, Greg, is called boondoggle. That's the official term for our get-togethers, man.
Okay.
And it's a boondoggle. So, we'll be putting something up at yakangler.com. We'll probably need to create an event page for that. Those guys are always in for hitting the road. I think Adam actually has said he will commit to making the trip to Charleston. So the Chuckdown Boondoggle will be Columbus Day weekend. Don't forget to tell them about our Facebook page, Kayak Fishing Radio, and they can like that page if they think it's worth it, and can follow us on Twitter at Kayak Fishing Radio. That would be Fish In Radio, because the rest of it is too long to make a name for Twitter. So Kayak Fishing Radio. And just real quick thanks to the guys from Coastal Fishing. I think that's Three Spots and Brett from Georgia Kayak Fishing. Stan, guys, y'all have a great weekend. I'm going to be out there doing some kayaking.
Very good, very good. Well, I think that about covers the hour. I think I've made it through my first show now. Can take a breath and relax and pop open a beer, and we'll talk to the rest of you next week. I want to thank all my guests for calling in. I don't know what I would have done without you guys. Appreciate it a whole lot. And we will go from there. So thank you very much, y'all. Tight lines, and good luck fishing this weekend.
Awesome job, Greg. See you later, man.
Definitely. Great job.
Please hang up and try again.